Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
So it's not a sin in your church to have an abortion?
That's the kind of conversation we would have, finding out your story, where you're from. God's the judge. People have to live to their own conviction.
The science is clear. The Bible is clear. And if we're honest, our intuitions are clear. We know what we're killing. We're killing a human being.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Progress has never been a bargain. You have to pay for it. Sometimes I think there's a man who sits behind a counter and says, all right, you can have a telephone, but you lose privacy and the charm of distance. Madam, you may vote, but at a price. You lose the right to retreat behind the powder puff or your petticoat. Mister, you may conquer the air, but the birds will lose their wonder. And the clouds will smell of gasoline.
This is Wretched Radio. That was Henry Drummond banging a drum that has been heard for an awfully long time and yet silenced in our very progressive age. Would like for your consideration to lay before you some thoughts we don't seem to think about much these days. And if you think that this is perhaps something that does not need to be addressed, let me take you back to Cranford or Downton Abbey. Why would we go there? Because if you ever watched any of those classic BBC type dramas, you know that people were regularly in a panic about technology. They were concerned that their pleasant way of life was going to be disturbed because of progress. Let me take you to Cranford. This was one of those great period pieces. I believe it had Lady, the dame, you know, the woman who's in all of these things.
I've never heard of this before.
This is a classic theme in all of these dramas. Oh, no. There's going to be a train coming to town?
Put no further pastries to your lips or you will choke when you hear the news. The railroad is to come to Cranford.
I rehearsed those words all the way from the Worsted Work. The railway will cut across Sir Charles's estate, and by 1845 we shall be utterly undone.
They will be utterly undone because a train is coming to town. I'm not making this up. In past eras, they were concerned about the disadvantages of technological advancements. Let me take you to Downton Abbey and the telephone.
It seems very wise to get a telephone now. If there is a war, it may be very hard to have one installed in a private house.
Well, let me show you where we're going to put it.
Oh.
First electricity, now telephones. Sometimes I feel as if I were living in an H.G. Wells novel.
Oh, no, the telephone. And if you recall the scene where the head butler was practicing. Hello, this is... By the way, that guy had the greatest voice ever. Hello, this is Downton Abbey. This is Butler Carson speaking. Practicing it because it was so new and people were worried. Hey, wait a second. Suddenly, human beings are going to be able to enter our house without walking through the front door. You and I think that's bonkers because we carry that device in our pockets wherever we go. We're tethered to that cellular bad boy. And yet, there was a time when we thought, hey, wait a second. You mean a complete stranger can now have access inside of our home? The telephone wasn't the only panic in Downton Abbey. If you recall, the radio.
Why are you so against getting a wireless?
In a way, I wish you'd just say it. Cousin Robert, please buy a wireless for Downton.
A radio. Mine?
That's because you're American, but I'm not, and I find the whole idea a kind of thief of life. That people should waste hours huddled around a wooden box listening to someone talking at them, burbling inanities from somewhere else.
But surely now, with the latest news and everything,
yikes,
it must be a boon for the old. What do you think, Bates?
I can't see the dowager with a wireless, lady.
It's a fad. It won't last.
Well, it did. But at what cost?
A wireless.
Another concern. Wait a second. I turn a button and a stranger now can actually talk to my entire family? Hold the phone, Henrietta. Let's not be so fast to invite progress and technological advancements into our home. And that brings us to Tucker Carlson in an interview with Ben Shapiro. Presented some ideas for your consideration. Please note, I am not jumping fully onto the Tucker Carlson bandwagon of banning driverless cars. But his point is powerful, and it is an opportunity for us as Christians to think through issues differently. What is our current mantra in society regarding technology and progress? It's all good. In fact, progress is deemed always the best thing because you need to be on the right side of history. And when it comes to technology, whether an invention, something industrial that streamlines the production of a widget, it's good, it's good, it's good, it's good. And Tucker Carlson is going to suggest, hold on, it might be good in some regards, but maybe it's not in another regard. And when I heard this interview, I was struck because it was clear Tucker Carlson, an Episcopalian, was trying to inject some Christian charity into the conversation about technology. And that is something that I think you and I can benefit from, even if you don't agree with all of this. So let Tucker Carlson perhaps stretch all of us to think through how we think through progress.
The question is, when the pedal hits the metal, like you talk in the book about technology and how it's shifting and taking away jobs from folks. Yes. And you make specific reference to truck driving and the fact that there are going to be these automated cars on the roads. So would you, Tucker Carlson, be in favor of restrictions on the ability of trucking companies to use this sort of technology specifically to, you know, sort of artificially maintain the number of jobs that are available in the trucking industry?
Are you joking? In a second. In other words, if I were president, would I say to DOT, Department of Transportation, we're not letting driverless trucks on the road, period. Why? Really simple. Driving for a living is the single most common job for high school educated men in this country, in all 50 states. By the way, that's the same group whose wages have gone down by 11% over the past 30 years. The social cost of eliminating their jobs in a 10-year span, 5-year span, 30-year span is so high that it's not sustainable. So the greater good is protecting your citizens.
Is that a debatable statement? It absolutely is. The greater good, because somebody could counter right quickly, well, hold on, they'll find a job in another sector, because that's the way it works. That's the way this whole capitalistic system is set up, that when a need is filled here and it might eliminate a job there, then they find a new place to go over here. That's the assumption. And does that work? As a rule, it does work as a general rule. But in the meantime, you might have individuals that are dramatically affected by a decision because we think that, hey, we can eliminate perhaps hours, expenses. We don't need to worry about insurance with human beings. We just have driverless cars. We believe that they are safer than people are. But we do that without considering the cost to human beings. And I'm not saying, therefore, we should never have driverless cars. No, I'm not saying that. But maybe we should think through how we go about the business of implementing these things.
Capitalism is the best economic system I can think of. I think that anyone's ever thought of. But that doesn't mean that it's a religion. And everything about it is good.
No, but
there's no Nicene Creed of capitalism that I have to buy into. What I care about is living in a country where, you know, decent people can live happy lives, actually. And so, no, I would say immediately, no, are you joking? And I maybe would make up some pretext for public consumption, like, oh, they're dangerous. The technology's not quite finessed. No. But the truth would be, I don't want to put 10 million men out of work because you're going to have 10 million dead families, and the cascading effect from that will wreck your country.
That is an interesting presentation. Is it not true? When it comes, for instance, to border issues, we as conservatives like to say, hey, there needs to be nations. God designed borders. God designed the idea of countries. They are biblical. They are good. They are right. He sets those lines. And we keep some people out because if you bring in too many of that might cause a negative job impact on the people who are presently here, well, it could crash the whole thing. And I think that's a valid debate to have. Most certainly it is. Then if that's the case, couldn't it also be true that if we implement some progress that causes, say, the collapse of 10 million families, that might so affect our society that we don't really have a society left because we've progressed ourselves right out of the basic institution that makes us what we are, and that is the family unit. This is a fascinating thing for us to consider as Christians. Have we perhaps bought into we just implement progress without any consideration? Please note, I am not saying that we reject it because it could cause the loss of 2, 10. And you could argue back. I get it. This is a debate. That's the whole point of this. This isn't a drawing a line. This is to encourage some Christian consideration on these issues. You could say, well, okay, 10 million. What if it's only 2 million? What if it's 500? Where do you draw the line? I get it. But the line that isn't even being considered is, how will progress and technology affect real human beings? Am I thinking through my culture and my world strictly as a capitalist, or am I letting my Christianity inform my capitalism? We will continue to explore that, courtesy of Tucker Carlson, next on Wretched Radio. Don't tell me you couldn't use a little encouraging news. This is from Paul Marty. He is the executive director of the Tomorrow Club's Kids Clubs, meeting all throughout Eastern Europe to bring impoverished nations and families the gospel.
You know, most Tomorrow Clubs work in former communist communities where we find so many kids and families living hopeless lives. But with the help of the Wretched audience, we've been able to bring the gospel, hope, and long-term discipleship to thousands of kids in these forsaken communities.
Praise God for that. Would you please consider joining our effort to reach these kids and their families to strengthen local churches in Eastern Europe? $30 a month, 30 disciples. It is an outstandingly efficient gospel-centered ministries. Please prayerfully consider supporting your own Tomorrow Club, tomorrowclubs.org/wretched, tomorrowclubs.org/wretched.
It's another day and another episode of Wretched Radio. Thank you so much for joining us here today. And listen, Road Trip to Truth, it's finally here. That's right, Road Trip to Truth is hosted by Millennial John Ferbarez, the son of Mike Ferbarez, and these episodes tackle tough issues that millennials struggle with. Subjects like, why is there evil in the world? Is Jesus really God? What about the supposed errors in the Bible? Is there really only one way to heaven? And many, many more. You know, the third leading cause of death among millennials is suicide. They're depressed, they're anxious, suicidal, and lost. And Road Trip to Truth is here to help you understand how to witness to this generation. Together, we can reach more and more people who are in desperate need of hearing the good news of the gospel of Jesus Christ. Road Trip to Truth, just one more reason to support Wretched. Visit wretched.org/donate today or text Wretched to 44321. Wretched, amazing grace, amazing gospel.
This is not a taunt. It's more like a dare. Don't ask me how that's different than a taunt. This is a double dog dare. Please try not to support preborn.org/wretched and give an ultrasound to a woman who is considering taking the life of her own child for just $28.
When I walked in for the ultrasound and I saw my baby and I heard his heartbeat, my mind changed completely. I couldn't do that to my baby. I have decided to keep it.
Oh, sorry, that would be taunting and daring. Would you please consider providing a $28 ultrasound or multiple ultrasounds through preborn.org/wretched?
I know that with support and with God by my side, I'll be able to do this, not just for me, but for my baby.
Preborn.org/wretched. I dare you not to.
Books of the Bible. The book of Ruth tells of a Moabite widow who chose to follow the God of Israel and found favor in the eyes of a godly man named Boaz, who claimed her family's land as her kinsman redeemer. Ruth and Boaz are the ancestors of Jesus and a foreshadowing of Jesus' work as our kinsman redeemer. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Is it possible that you are adhering to a Christless capitalism. This is Wretched Radio. You and I, as Christians, should be better thinkers than pagans. You should be able to compete in the arena of ideas with loftier thoughts, more holistic thoughts. And I'm not talking about essential oils here. I'm talking about well-rounded, considering all aspects of everything. And if we fail to bring our Christianity into an arena, any arena, then what is the point of our faith? I mean, besides, you know, being forgiven of our sins, we should be applying our worldview to every scenario. Isn't that what 2 Corinthians 10 is about? That we tear down strongholds, whether it's in the world or in our own brain, intellectual frameworks that are inefficient or that are inconsiderate. And I would like to challenge myself and perhaps you as we take a look at capitalism. It is, in my estimation, the best system ever concocted. It considers that people are driven by self, that people are driven for survival, that people are sinners, and somehow we need a system that controls each and every sinner. A big government determining the prices for everybody, making decisions for every single sector of the industrial world, impossible. But capitalism forces us to behave. It forces us to give a good deal to somebody, otherwise we won't be making no more deals. Capitalism, in my opinion, helps the most people, and that is historical, and that is certifiable. Nevertheless, as we go about the business of taking a look at progress, we need to bring our Christianity into our considerations. And Tucker Carlson, an Episcopalian, that's always worth noting, an Episcopalian, has brought his Christian faith into his consideration of industrialization.
I mean, there were massive costs to the Industrial Revolution.
But you say you're a fan of capitalism and development. We wouldn't have all the cool stuff we have, right?
I mean, maybe, yeah, well, look, I'm for capitalism. I'm for machines.
Right.
You know, they all but guarantee I'll live way longer than my great-grandparents. I get it. I'm for machines, okay? I'm just saying that there was a cost. Half the world was enslaved for 70 years under Bolshevism because those countries didn't manage, I would argue, the transition from an agrarian economy into an industrial one. That's what that was, okay? So we're on the cusp of a completely transformative revolution, as or more transformative as the Industrial Revolution. Yep. And no one is trying to take control of it at all, or figure out how to channel these forces into an outcome that we want to live with realistically. And because they're not, you're going to see reactions, and you're already seeing reactions against this stuff that are flat out extreme.
Do you remember the Christians who would talk about the danger of technology, the iPhone, a decade ago? And their voices were heard to a degree, but considered, come on, man, look, it was just steamroller. We could have all of this information in a phone. You bet we can. We can also have predators. We can also have pornography. We can also have scams. We can also have people who get into your financial stuff and wreck your identity theft. And we talked about those things, but I don't think it was in the context of, okay, wait a second now. We like the progress idea, but at what cost? And maybe as we go about the business of rolling out this progress and these advancements, we do it with some consideration of people. And yet the creed today is, no. Don't worry about people. It just has to make life better, which is really in keeping with the zeitgeist, is it not? That it's all about comfort. It's not about character. It's just make my life easy. And capitalism and progress when it comes to technological inventions or industrial inventions, it makes life easy. And I'm grateful. But am I stopping to pause and ask the question? At my comfort expense is maybe somebody who gets hurt?
I'm merely making a couple of very obvious observations.
That there are downsides to this.
We are not servants of our economic system. We are not here to serve as shareholders. We're human beings. And our concerns are real. Now, they must be balanced against the concerns of shareholders and lots of other concerns. But to say that, you know, if it's more efficient to have you move to some crappy suburb to serve some company because that's what, you know, is best to increase value, it's like, it's okay for me to stand up and say, you know, there are other concerns here, actually. And there's a social cost to doing that. Anyway, this all used to be obvious. These things were actually debated during the Industrial Revolution.
They were and were not. That's the point of all of this. And by the way, the beeps for Tucker, they weren't like horrible words. They're just not words that I would use. His point is that you and I think about moving. There's nothing to move. Okay, so you lost your job because there was an event. Then just get another job, get on the internet, find it. And if it means that you have to leave everything behind, it is assumed that we will. And Tucker Carlson, I think, is rightly reminding us, wait a second, not so fast here.
Rights are used for propaganda purposes to make the other side seem ludicrous. You're literally smashing machines. You're a dummy. You're an animal. You know what I mean? But actually, the concern is totally real. If you spend, I don't know, just like roughly 5,000 years in one kind of economy that changes incrementally over time, but basically living from what you grow, living with your family and working 100 yards away for thousands of years, and then in the space of, I don't know, 100 years after the steam engine is invented, everything is completely different. That's a lot. It doesn't mean that you should stop it or smash the machines with a hammer, but it means you should be thoughtful in the way you channel these awesome forces, these awesome economic forces. You are not a servant to them. They are tools that thoughtful people use to increase the goodness of their society.
Have we pondered that lately?
This is something I have never thought about. When you think about fast food restaurants that are putting now the machines where you do your self-order, or other grocery stores where now it's all self-checkout, you're not thinking about how that's affecting other hardworking people.
Oh, so you don't want us to have milkshakes anymore, huh? Oh, fine. Then I guess we'll just drink water out of a bucket from the creek. Okay. That isn't the... But see, that's the easy rejoinder. That's the simple response. That's not it. This is more nuanced. This is more thoughtful. And I've got to confess to you, Tucker Carlson, I think, reminds us that we give up a lot because of progress. Have you had to move? Have you had to be transplanted because of the opportunity when maybe you would have preferred to just stay there where you've got roots, where you drive by homes and go, well, that's where the Johnsons used to live. That cemetery, I've got an aunt and uncle buried there and three of my cousins. You just move. You got to get a job. Just go. And I get that. But are we talking about human beings and actual lives as we do so? What if the technology immediately puts a million people out of work? That's a lot of folks. And I get it. The capitalistic system accounts for that because it fills in the cracks. And you just go find it elsewhere. But that's exactly the conundrum. You have to go find it elsewhere. And when we used to live together as a family, working together as a family, doing pretty much the same job together, tell me that isn't sweet. And as we focus on the family so much as evangelicals, we don't even consider that we have simply, it's colored us. The culture has colored us. And it's just assumed families move. And I'm not saying it's wrong to do that. But when we forget, that's a big deal. That's important. And there used to be a way of life that focused on the family because it was assumed that family would stay together, and you don't leave your ancestral land because it is a blessing to be there and have some roots and actually care about the place and have some of those things that make it feel like, well, I'm not totally just a stranger in this land because it sure feels like it some days. I'm in my home, and I'm not saying it's wrong to move people or to move. But at what cost are we thinking it through as Christians?
So I guess I'm just so struck by, like, whenever I talk to liberals or conservatives, market fundamentalists in Washington, they're like, well, we can't stop. This is technology. It's inexorable. Like, we have really no role in it other than to try to benefit from it. It's like, really? You're talking about machines. Are they really in charge? No, we're in charge. We're human beings with free will. God created us to make these decisions.
They should be subservient to us. And if you're thinking, hey, wait a second, this now means government involvement in industry. Yeah, maybe.
We have an obligation to think deeply about what's best for normal people. That's all I'm saying. That's it. That's all I'm saying. And we are not powerless in the face of these forces. And if we decide that we are powerless in the face of them, we're all just along for the ride. We're not the authors of history. We're merely just flotsam floating atop it. It's like, whoa, that's a totally different way of thinking about it. That's really bad. And as we go through these changes, the people benefiting most, to whom much is given, much is expected, they should feel an obligation to those beneath them in the way you feel to your children.
That's certainly
employees.
I feel. I mean, you know,
they should feel guilty.
That's why charity exists. But
exactly.
What do you want? Trustbusters again? And Teddy Roosevelt? That's not the point of this conversation. It's singular. Are we incorporating our Christian worldview into our culture, specifically into technology, into progress, into industrial advancements, or are we priceless capitalists? This is Wretched Radio.
Important dates in Christian history. 385 AD. In Milan, Bishop Ambrose defies the Empress. This event helped to establish the precedent of the Church confronting the state when necessary to protect Christian teaching and oppose injustice and corruption in government. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Not to beat the horse or anything. But we're gonna. This is Wretched Radio. Much food for thought, courtesy of Tucker Carlson, as he challenges us to consider, is our capitalism with or without our Christian faith? And that will perhaps not even give us a different answer to the question, is this technological advancement good? But it might help us to consider actual people. Perhaps, for instance, you're a boss, you're a manager, and you are trying to find the best person to fill the position. You go on and do the I don't want to get a little technological on you. What's the thing that people do for jobs? So the
interview?
No.
Resume?
No. On the internet where you put up you connect with people.
Job? I don't know.
Oh, you guys are as pathetic as I am with the
networking?
No, there's a website thingy where you put the diddly bob on the thing of a jig. Everybody knows what I'm talking about here.
The diddly bob.
where you simply post, here's where I'm working, and this is how you can get in touch with me. Wink, wink. I'm open to offers. There's all kinds of networking that can take place. You take advantage of that. What a blessing it is. You can find a better employee halfway around the world, way across the other side of the country. And what do? You target them, you go for them, and then you offer them an incentive to move. But do you consider the cost to that family? Do you consider what it means for somebody to uproot and to leave the land that they perhaps love? And I know, Christian, that we're like Abraham. We're strangers here. I understand. That's not the point. The point is, are we considering people in this process? If it's true, according to Tucker Carlson, that millions of men who have a high school diploma, who are making a good wage as long-haul truckers, and let me tell you, that ain't easy work if you think it is. They would be, boom, instantly put out of work, and they would have to go seeking employment elsewhere. If it's 10 million, if it's 5 million, if it's a million, if it's one, honestly, are we at least stopping and thinking, okay, what does that feel like for these people? The point is, am I being driven with Christianity, with compassion, with consideration, or is my capitalism the framework that I must abide by? And I hear that language from us all the time.
And I know some people would say, well, I think we've already mentioned, but they'll just go find another job. I got plenty of family that's in the trucking industry. And for the guys that have done this for 25, 30 years, it's hard to just go pick up another job.
And why?
Well, that's what they've known. They've done this for 25, 30 years.
And they've dedicated their lives to it to make sure that you and I have stuff. When we go to the grocery store, did you miss the toilet paper days? Remember that, Penny? That stuff had to get there from a truck driver. Now, That man, that woman who is committed years to that enterprise for our convenience, suddenly the plug is pulled. Can't we don't even say get him a gold watch. Okay, fine, you did it for 25 years. So we're not doing anything in consideration for actual human beings. I don't know if it actually feels better to be laid off or fired. I don't know. You could debate it. My point is, it ain't fun to lose your job so often, right, wrong, or indifferent. That isn't the point either. People and their identity, they're often wrapped together with their job. That's why we meet somebody and say, oh, what do you do for a living? Because that kind of tells us about who they are. So you say to the trucker, your job is gone. You'll just have to find a job elsewhere. Whoa. You mean I'm not going to get a paycheck next week? Now, I'm not saying halt progress. Are we being compassionate? Is capitalism the framework that guides our conversation and decisions, or is Christianity, and we can take a look at the capitalistic system and measure it by the Bible and not vice versa? That is unique for us, because I hear those of us who are conservative, and I'm not saying anybody's a sinner that they're doing, but we talk about these systems like, well, that's no. Or the political system, for instance. Now, I'm not saying change your party, but we realize conservative, if you, let's say, trickle down economics, you're persuaded that's it. Okay, cool. Are there any costs to it? Are there disadvantages to it? Or because we don't want to be a part of anything that the enemy is saying about what we believe to be the better approach to economics, that we can't ever critique the system. As Christians, we must. We've got to be those people. And I realize that it can feel like you're on a tight wire, perhaps without a net, because there's a sense that if I start to question or bring any sort of criticism to my worldview, I have abandoned it entirely. We haven't. You haven't. And by the way, I'm not even talking about theology at the moment. This is, theology has nothing to do with this per se. That's not what's in the bullseye here. Am I the one who talks at a dinner party? I think we still do those things. You want to, speaking of which, do you want to know what happened over the weekend?
You didn't have me over for dinner, so what?
But somebody just dropped in. If you had just dropped in, we would have welcomed you.
Oh.
Serious. Somebody dropped in.
Do you hear that, Jimmy?
There they were.
We just got to drop in.
I'm in the backyard, and the man, I'll leave the guilty person's name out of this. The man, I was in back. I was dealing with cleaning something up, and Mrs. Friel is up front watering the plants, and I hear the guy approach and say, Jehovah's Witnesses, and I drop what I'm doing because I'm thinking red meat to go running up. And it turned out it was like, wait a second, you just showed up? You didn't even text. It was delightful. It was really wonderful. Those days are really gone, aren't they? Okay, here's another question, tangentially, at what cost? Why does everything that we do these days have to be so organized? Why does it have to be, okay, get out your calendar. You're going to come over then. Then we've got to clean the house meticulously to make sure that you don't have a bad impression. Can't have anything on the counters. Everything needs to be picked up, put away, cleaned up. I don't think they're going to. Just close those doors. They won't go in there. Just close those doors. We throw everything in there because we've got to give the impression that it's all good. Don't you long for the days of people dropping by and just hanging out, having a cup of coffee? I'll put a pot of coffee on and we're just going to sit and chat.
I love it.
Those days, I'm telling. In fact, I remember seeing a picture of you, Mike and Jimmy. You're sitting at a table in Tennessee someplace with sure. Tom Hammond. And I went, I'd like to be in that picture right now.
Really?
Yipper. It looked impromptu, and it didn't look like it was like an organ. Okay, everybody sit down. Okay, you can unfold your napkin now. Let's eat.
Nothing we did with Tom Hammond was organized.
Ah, just those lovely days. They seem to be so gone. Okay, have we even considered that cost? And it's not to say, let's go back. It's to say, as we move forward, let's have our Christianity inform our worldview, not our systems. Are you saying that capitalism should be discarded? Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying. I think we should become socialists. No, communists. That's what I'm... It's not the point at all. When we watch the news, am I cycling it through my Christian filter? For instance, and this is going to be hard, and I am not saying I'm not guilty, because I am not. When you see somebody misbehaving on your TV screen, what informs your response? There they are. Great. When are the Democrats going to get that under control? It's all Democratic cities. All correct observations, by the way. Or do I see a bunch of hoodlums who perhaps didn't have a father, and it grieves me that that child didn't, as opposed to just using that statistic to say, well, there you go. See, that's the problem right there. Which could be a correct observation, but is my Christian heart telling me how grievous that a thug grew up that way because dad wasn't there? Or because there was not a good education available? We should be able to see a heroin addict lying in the street with a needle dangling from his arm and in part be grieved by it. Now, perhaps not the totality of it. You see it and you go, and there can be some righteous indignation. And there can be a sense of, well, this is, if we'd stop giving away needles, it's so dumb. We're giving away needles because we don't want drug addicts to perhaps get a disease because they shoot up all the time. I get that. But do I also get grief? Ugh, an image bearer of God lying in the street with a needle dangling from his arm, shot up, hepped up on some garbage that shouldn't be put into a toilet, let alone into a human body. Do I always respond perfectly? Not a chance. But is the goal to be responding to our world, its tragedies, its good and its bad, with a Christian heart that informs every aspect of the subject? We are the people who should lead the way in that regard, shouldn't we? This is Wretched Radio. Trust me, you are going to want to call this number, 1-844-34-BIBLE. 1-844-34-BIBLE. Why? Because you are going to talk to a very nice representative at MediShare who will share with you the benefits of joining over 400,000 Christians who have shared over $4 billion in medical expenses. This is the alternative perhaps you have been praying for regarding health insurance. This is affordable, biblical health sharing. 1-844-34-BIBLE. The MediShare representative will tell you what you can be saving per month. On average, $500 per month per family. See, I told you you'd want to call 1-844-34-BIBLE, 1-844-34-BIBLE for MediShare.
Okay, so this may or may not be the most wonderful time of the year in many regards, but if you're a gospel partner, we want to ask you to join us here at Wretched in rejoicing for two reasons. First, regardless of what's going on in this crazy, out-of-control world we're in, Jesus Christ still reigns, and he's still in total and thorough control of, well, everything. The second thing is, we want you to take a moment to rejoice in knowing that we partnered together to reach more people in 2020 than any other year. And because of the ongoing faithful and financial support of our gospel partners, we have absolutely no intentions of slowing down at all. And if you're not a gospel partner, we would truly be grateful if you would prayerfully consider becoming a financial partner of Wretched. And then next year, at this same time, we can rejoice together for the same two reasons. To become a gospel partner, it's easy. Just visit wretched.org/donate or text the word wretched to the number 44321. Thank you, gospel partners, and have a Merry Christmas.
Who needs rich little? You might have to Google that. When you've got me, don't know if you realize this, I do impressions, and this is my impersonation of Dr. John MacArthur. I'll just I'll just riff ad lib about the Master's Academy International in hopes that you will consider supporting your own mini seminary in one of 17 nations around the world. Here we go.
Strong pastors in strong churches impact the entire culture from the inside. And that is the vision of TMAI, to go when we are invited by indigenous pastors who want to do it biblically. And that's our mission.
Not bad, eh? Would you please check out the Master's Academy International at wretched.org/pastor and consider adopting a seminary overseas? The fruit, magnificent. As John MacArthur would say, wretched.org/pastor.
Know your church fathers. Athenagoras was a Christian philosopher in Athens who used his training to defend the Christian faith against Roman persecution. He wrote On the Resurrection of the Dead, arguing that the nature of God, the nature of humanity, and the concept of justice only makes sense if there is a physical resurrection. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Field.
Hey, as long as we're heaping on the conviction, how's about another dollop? This is Wretched Radio. That's right. I don't know if you realize this, but if you're going to serve up conviction, it comes in dollops. That's the measurement that is used for conviction. A dollop of conviction for your consideration. Perhaps this will help you even as you're being convicted to get out of bed in the morning with a little pep in your step, because you're going to work, not period, for whom? For whom do you work? Who is your employer? I get it. In an earthly sense, the boss, the person who signs the paycheck. Got it. But ultimately, for the Christian, we work for the Lord. Who's your boss? God Almighty. Who is watching you every second of the day? The Lord of hosts. Who is the one that sees what you're doing when the boss has his back turned? The Lord Jesus Christ, maker of heaven and earth. Oh, that's a little different, isn't it? Have you pondered that lately? If you're pooped out from your employment, you're just tired of it. It's mundane. It has no more zip to it. It has no more, oh, this is, yeah. It's just tiresome and tedious. This should help you. Is it going to make it all better? No, but this should help you to recognize your boss is God. And that is not just a little bumper sticker. That's a reality. And that needs to seep in. And if I could toss in an aside for you, older man, perhaps older woman, maybe you are in your 50s, perhaps in your 60s. I have not talked to one, but I've talked to a number of men who have this feeling. The feeling is there's no longer any zest to work. That this, I think this typically especially applies to those people who have been rather successful, because perhaps when they started out, times were tough and there was that scramble and there was a buzz about that. And there was an excitement to it. But because of God's blessing and kindness and their skills applied and tons of hard work, they figured it out and they got it. And now there's no more sense of, where's the next mountain? Where's the brass ring? I need to grab something. I could be totally wrong about this, so please, like I need to tell you to consider what I'm going to say.
We're ready.
That seems rather unnecessary to anything I say. You should consider really thoughtfully. Maybe, just maybe, the role of the elder man, woman who's been successful is not to climb a new mountain, but to maintain a steady hand. And that the excitement comes from steadfastness and not from inventing something new. Here's how it typically plays out in the pagan world, and all too often, I think, in the Christian world. You see these men typically driving around in Corvettes, and they will typically have a woman who's, 20 or 30 years younger than they are. They need something zesty. They need new and fresh. So what do? They get tchotchkes. They get things that make life feel exciting again. And in this scenario, they find a woman who makes it feel exciting again. Oh, the chase. oh, the romance. And the guy gets to show off because he's got more stuff than she probably does at her age. And so there's this sense of I'm accomplished. That's the pagan response. Don't fall for that trap. Don't be lured and tempted by that. And I'm not just talking about finding a blonde babe to drive around with in a Corvette. I'm talking about staying steady in your marriage. That, wow. I'll tell you, I don't care how successful a man is compared to what's going on in the home. When I meet a man whose wife and kids love him, the kids still come back for the holidays, that impresses me. That's, there you go, sir. Well done. It's not to say that their success hasn't been terrific and commendable, but wow, the deep, deep things of family. That's where a man really shines. Sir, don't be lured or tempted. If you've kind of, life maybe has, you kind of done it. You've been there, you've done that. You're not mopey, but you just kind of wish that there was a new thing. Maybe steadfastness is the new thing. Maybe that actually is it. I'm going to stay steady at my work. I'm going to stay steady in my position. I'm going to stay steady in my marriage with my kids, with my grandkids. I'm not going to wander and stray. I'm not going to go do something dopey. I'm just going to hang in there and hang at it. And that's the buzz. That's the buzz right there. Now, it's maybe not as immediate, but maybe, just maybe, for your chapter of life, that is the very thing that you are called to do. Food for thought. Because I meet a lot of fellas that express that sentiment. They're accomplished. They're smart. They know what to do. They can handle situations. And they wish that they could... Somebody, give me a challenge here. All right, here's your challenge. Do it steadfastly with joy. Maybe that's the challenge, because that's the way God designs life. Increasingly, I am persuaded, not that I should have had to have been persuaded. God is so smart with the way that he set this up through chapters of life that he has got this arranged in such a fashion that it makes so much sense as he's determined it for us. When you're about this age and this region of life, this is what it's supposed to be like. Don't worry. It's going to change, and I'm going to bring you there, and then I'm going to take you to the next place, and I'm going to advance you to that situation. And maybe, just maybe, if that's true, and I believe that it is, your current situation, as you are now starting to look into the senior years, oh, could I just have, I just want to run with the bulls one more time. Then maybe just being steadfast is your running with the bulls. Maybe. But that was just food for thought. Here's your dollop of conviction that when you put your hand to the plow, you work really hard. And maybe this will help you to do so if you're finding work to be a little bit mundane. And I might call out, especially you, dear stay-at-home mom. Is the diaper genie ever empty? Will I ever be done doing dishes? Four qualities of God-honoring work. This is from the Aquila Report. One, we're supposed to do it with energy. Paul to the Thessalonians. Now we command you, brothers, in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ. That's a serious command. Hey, you know, you might want to think of... No. In the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that you keep away from any brother who is walking in idleness and not in accord with the tradition that you receive from us. For even when we were with you, we would give you this command. If anyone is not willing to work, let him not eat. So we should be hard workers. Whatever the task is, because this is what God calls us to. This is not an effort to be legalistic. This is an effort to encourage us that God has this figured out for us. And when we get with his program, there is blessing. It may not be a bonus this quarter, but the blessing of putting your head on your pillow and going, I serve the Lord today. Do you work with energy? In other words, do you work hard? From the Aquila Report, in our Lord's parable of the talents, the master tells the servant who has done nothing with his talent, you wicked and slothful servant. Yikes. And this author concludes, you can't serve God, be faithful to the Lord, and be lazy at the same time.
That's big.
Oof.
Yeah.
You cannot be lazy and be a godly employee. Or employer, for that matter. They go together. I don't want to make this a law. I want to make this a delight. Okay, I'm working for the Lord, the one who surrendered his life for me, who worked for me, who worked more tireless for me than I ever will for him or for any employer. And because I work ultimately for God, I can do this with energy and to enthusiasm. Whatever you do, Paul to the Colossians, work heartily as for the Lord. Don't be slothful in zeal, but fervent in spirit. Serve the Lord. In other words, you do it with zip. The conductor of a great symphony, when asked which was the most difficult instrument to play, he said second violin. Why? Well, we can get plenty of first violinists, but to get someone who will play second violin with enthusiasm, that's a problem. Are you willing to play second fiddle enthusiastically? You should. Your 17th fiddle. I'm doing this for the... It's not because of my chair. It's not because more of the audience can see me or will respect me more. Because God sees me. Do you do it wholeheartedly? That's slightly different, but you do it... I'm in. I'm not just pretending. I'm doing it because I'm wholehearted about this. And ultimately, with excellence. Genesis, what do we see God? When he finishes creation, he gives himself a grade.
It's good.
Excellent. It's very good. He did good work. And we should too. Why? Because that's how God acts. It is impossible to dedicate over half of one's waking hours, maybe 80 to 100,000 hours, to a sub-biblical work ethic and not suffer immense spiritual trauma. Our vocation, be it ever so humble, is a divine calling and thus liberating us to do it for the glory of God. If you have been a little bit weary, a little slow to get out of bed, remember your boss is calling you every morning. And his name is Jesus Christ. And you get to work for him today. Excellently, enthusiastically, energetically. What a job. Until tomorrow, go serve your kingdom.